In a world full of movie podcasts, here is one more. Welcome to Defend Your Movie with Sean Donnelly
and Andrew Fiore.
The time has come again. The champion must end. It can only be one of us. Victoria!
Everybody, before we get to the episode here, we just wanted to tell you guys, if you possibly can, please subscribe, rate, and review to the show. It really helps us as far as getting the word out about the show. We've mentioned it a bunch. It helps the algorithm of iTunes, and it puts us up on a bunch of lists and all sorts of stuff. So it can only help the show get better if you can subscribe, rate, and review, and tell your friends. You know, tell your friends that are quarantined right now. We'd really appreciate it. Defenders, you're the best. Thank you so much.
I was also here.
Hello there, everybody, and welcome to another edition of your favorite podcast, my favorite podcast, your mom's favorite podcast. It has to be Defend Your Movie. I am one of your hosts, Sean Donnelly, and I am joined here by the effervescent Andrew Fiore, ladies and gentlemen.
What so a excited. Nice intro. Thank you very much.
Yeah, man, I'm really trying to be a positive person these days.
Oh, good to see you. Good to be back.
It's hard not to be, you know, in your head during during the core.
Yeah, I think that's one of the major hurdles personally that I've had to get over. It's just, you know, you have a roommate, I live alone. It's tough, yeah. Man.
Well, I feel bad. Like, you must have it. You have, like, being alone in that place, like, you must be bouncing off your walls.
I'm bouncing off the walls. I'm trying to stay home as much as possible.
Right.
I've driven out to my parents' house a few times just to see them and stay in the driveway and backyard, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm so scared about this thing. But also, I've tried to live my life as best possible, go for walks and see friends at a safe distance, you know? So,
yeah, like we said,
it helps, man. So,
well, I saw you at the park and only safe distance.
Yeah. Absolutely. But other than that, things are going good. It's a nice day out here in Queens, New York, where we live, and I'm ready to talk some movies, pal.
All righty. I got to tell you, I watched a ton of stuff. Like, I don't even know if we'll get to the topic, but it's a really great topic. Do you want to tell everybody what the topic is this week?
Yeah, we got a good one. We figured this is something I had written down on my list for a while now, and for whatever reason, we didn't get to it. But we thought we'd dig into biopics, which I think is a fun topic. There's so many great ones out there. And
there's a ton of really good ones.
We've got two different points of view, and we'll get to that. But first, what'd you watch?
Oh, dude, this is how many I've watched. I have to go to my list.
Do you want me to give you one?
Okay, so the first one, you want to start first?
I watched a very cool movie that was a straight Netflix find called Bleed Like This. Have you ever heard of it or seen it, Johnny?
No.
It's a great boxing movie, flew way under the radar. It's a true story. It's about Vinny Pazienza. I hope I'm saying that right. Rhode Island boxer.
I've heard the name before.
Yeah. He was a guy who was a middleweight, featherweight kind of boxer, pro boxer, but was doing very well for himself. Had a title fight, won a title fight, and gets in this terrible car accident. Like,
oh my God.
Breaks bones in his neck. They don't know if he's ever even going to walk again, let alone box again. And through the point of this, through the whole plot of the movie is basically the comeback story. It's, you know, it's a biopic in itself, actually. So we can give away spoilers because it's a true story. He kind of works out against doctor's orders his whole time in his recovery. He's got one of those halo things on.
Yeah.
Those big.
Yeah, where it's connected to your head.
Things. And yeah. They're like
one of the things from what Joan Cusack wears in Better Off Dead. Whatever that is. In one of the John Hughes movies, Joan Cusack has that giant, like, head brace thing.
Yeah. So he's kind of working out the whole time against doctor's orders. They're like, hey, one slip in the wrong direction, you're going to be paralyzed for life. And He's just kind of through determination and also through stubbornness, overcomes all the bones breaking and the halo and the surgeries. And it's a really good movie. Miles Teller plays the guy. And I got to say, that kid's a good actor.
Miles Teller. Miles, is he the one?
He's the kid from Whiplash.
Yeah, he's good. He's a good actor. He's very, like, he stands out as amongst, like, the average Joe type actors. You know what I'm saying? Like he's very understated, but he's a good actor.
Yeah. And Aaron.
There's a million guys that look like him. Like, he looks like a Jonas brother to me. Like, I just, all those, he's just like a white guy
right.
type of thing, you know?
So, really good boxing movie, man. I don't know how this kind of went under the radar, but bleed for this. Check it out.
Was it straight to Netflix or was it in the theaters?
I don't know. It was from 2016, and it looks like it did terribly at the box office.
And Miles Teller plays Vinny Pazienza?
Yes. Aaron Eckhart plays his trainer. Katie Sagal's in it. It's also like a great Rhode Island, East Coast kind of gangster, 80s, early 90s. It's just a fun picture, and I really enjoyed it, man. So
did anybody try to put on the accent like in Outside Providence when
it's not as bad. I didn't notice it, so that must have meant it was pretty good.
Okay, that's good. Then maybe they just did, maybe they're just like, don't even do it. Like, it's better not to do it at that point.
Yeah.
That's cool. I would check it out because I like boxing movies. I've watched The Fighter. Speaking of biopics, it's like that's one of my favorites as well. I've watched The Fighter multiple times. That's actually a really good movie. It's a David O. Russell. Is it David O. Russell? No,
yeah,
it is. David O. Russell. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Christian Bale. And Christian Bale, man. And
Stu Costello.
Like, Stu Costello. Yeah, exactly. Christian Bale is really – I think he doesn't get his due because it's like one of those things where he's almost like Joaquin Phoenix light. And that sounds like an insult, but it's not. Like – think about it. He's a guy who he's in movies and you can still believe he's the characters. That's the thing that we talk about a lot on the podcast. Like, when do you get the Tom Hanks effect where it's not the guy anymore? It's just Tom Hanks. Yep. Like, Tom Hanks playing Mr. Rogers, another biopic. Like, it's not Mr. Rogers anymore.
Yes.
It's just Tom Hanks. Christian Bale, you put him in The Fighter. Yeah, you knew it was Christian Bale, but you watch that video at the end of the movie where they have the actual brother, Mickey Ward's brother.
Right.
And you're like, dude, it's like he's the guy. Like, he does a pretty good dead on impression of this guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So I like boxing movies, so I'll check it out. Yeah. I have one that's kind of related to last week. Remember how I watched a movie called The Silence?
Yes.
With Stanley Tucci.
Tucci gang.
I watched the actual Quiet Place.
Yeah. What'd you think?
And here's the thing, man. Like, it's so funny how you can have the movie have basically the same plot and one movie can be so much better than – it's like
–
it just shows you the magic of movie making.
Yeah.
First off, Krasinski as a director, spot on, man. Great job.
I know. Yeah.
Ridiculous. Like basically every – it's really hard because if you think about it, like – This is one of these movies, A Quiet Place, that you go into it. When you hear the story, you go, what? And everybody is a little bit cynical when they hear that. Now, if you watch The Silence, you go, yes, that's exactly how I thought it would play out. And it's comically bad, right?
Yep.
But you watch A Quiet Place, and you're like, they nailed it. They made me – like, talk about – like, it almost becomes a Hitchcockian level as far as, like
– I know. It's a very hard technique.
Playing with the sound and the shots and the lighting and it's a really well-done, like, horror-ish type thriller-ish movie.
I loved it.
It was good. Really loved it, right? Really great acting in it. The girl from Mad Men is in the other one, The Silence, and – she's supposed to be definite. And this one, like, the girl, you're like, she's actually deaf. Like, she's deaf. Like,
now, when you were telling me about this last week, I'm like, wait, that's the exact same movie.
The only difference is that one of them is aliens. The other one's prehistoric birds. That's the only difference. And the other one is, like, in The Silence, they talk way louder. The Quiet Place, they're like, we're sticking to our universe's rules. Like, we're sticking to them hardcore. You can barely make any sound. In The Silence, they're having, like, barbecues, they're shooting off guns. Like,
they got fireworks.
Like, they're like, yeah, like, don't worry, the birds take off on the weekends. Don't worry about it. You know, like, it's like, Like, it's a sloppy storytelling at best. You know what
was
I mean?
Was there any like, lines where, like, now you fly south for the winter?
Like, no, but that would be amazing if there was. I told you, they introduce that weird, like, the no-tongue cult that comes by, which is actually kind of a terrifying idea, but that becomes more menacing than the actual birds. Like, they kind of figure out the birds.
Right,
and that's
right.
This is in the silence. But watching A Quiet Place, man, and people great who movie. Haven't seen it, I'm going to kind of mention a part. The very last – I love the very last moment of the movie. Love it because, first off, it sets up a sequel but not in a corny way.
Yep.
And there's literally – what happens is, well, you know, they realize that the girl – the hearing aids that Krasinski has been making – it's a great tie-in. It's almost like the tie-in that Signs wanted but couldn't pull off.
Yes. You know what I'm saying? Like, great
the
example.
Water and the water glasses.
I know. It's the fucking that, water.
But I still love Signs.
I was just such a cop out to an otherwise great movie.
I just dived into the universe and I was like, I don't care. It's so well done up until that point. I'm like,
yeah,
I'll take that ride. That's fine by me. And there's enough of a scare at the end with the kid with the asthma in Signs that I'm like, it's fine.
Yeah.
But when it comes to A Quiet Place,
Domino's Children.
It's such a great scene. Such a great scene.
Yeah, that spooked the fuck out of me the first time I saw that. When homie walks by the bushes, I lost my mind. I saw it in the theater. I was like, ah!
Did you say homie? Did you say homie?
Yeah, whatever they're called, the aliens.
Homie, the alien?
When homie was at the bushes. When your
it's
boy.
The big homie, that green alien. Anyway, in Quiet Place. Excuse me.
Oh, boy. I don't like this. Johnny's got
that's my dry throat. In A Quiet Place, they had the tie-in is that all the hearing aids or the hearing devices that Krasinski, her father's been working on, put out a frequency that fucks with the aliens. And it's great. Right. And they kind of foreshadow it early on, and you're like, you kind of see where it's going. And at the end, they're in the house and she has one of them. She puts it on the frequency, it messes the thing up. They shoot it with a shotgun and kill it because it slows it down. And the very last scene, with people who don't know, is this great moment. It's her and her mom, Emily Blunt, and they killed the one. And on the monitors they have to see who's coming up to the house, you see all the rest of them coming up. And the little girl turns up the volume on the frequency, and the mom just pumps the shotgun. And they look at each other. And it's the end of the movie. Such a badass ending.
I know. I'm glad you loved it because I loved it as well. I know your whole thing with horror movies, but it's more of like a suspense movie than horror, I would say. And it's even suspense, thriller. It's not a horror movie.
It's
sci-fi,
a movie.
And it's...
That's what's so funny about the horror thing. Like, me not liking horror, but I love movies like this. So it's not...
It's a great movie.
I don't
mind
being scared. I just don't like gross-out horror shit.
Yeah,
but,
I agree.
I've
never been a fan of, like, the Saw movies. Which was, like,
I've never seen any
horror.
Of them. I'm just like, eh.
But I loved the way they did it, too, because they kind of set that up, like, little father-daughter strife, too, where she's like, you don't care enough about me to pay attention to me. And he's like, it really shows at the end, you're like, no, that's what he just wanted to fix you so badly.
Does he blame her? Because their other kid dies early in the movie, early in the crisis.
Yeah.
And one of the things, right? Is that what it is?
No, yeah, like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, the baby dies, the little kid dies. And the other mitigating factor is that Emily
what
Blunt's
a moment
pregnant.
That is when the fucking siren goes off and you go, oh no.
Oh my God. It's crazy. So, I think that he also, she thinks he resents her because she was watching, either she gave the kid back the toy that made the noise.
Yeah. Well, what happened was they were in the supermarket and the mother, you know, or the father took the toy away from the boy. It was like, you know, this could kill us if it makes a noise.
Right.
And so
it's the very opening scene. It starts off. You're in the action. It's great.
Yeah. The daughter grabs it for him and secretly gives it to the.
Okay. So that's why she thinks that he doesn't like her.
Because it's kind of her fault. The kid's dead. And then like the kid all like happened to grab the batteries, too.
Yeah. But here's the thing, man. What a great idea. What a great story idea. Because it makes it so much deeper.
Really hard to pull off, but it's done really well where you don't even pay attention to there not being any dialogue.
You don't. You absolutely
don't.
It's
really great.
You just keep – you're on the edge of your seat. You're kind of waiting for the next thing. I didn't watch A Quiet Place 2. I heard it wasn't that great, but
– No, I don't think it ever got released, dude. It was like
– Oh, is that what happened? Okay, so I thought it just came and went.
No, Quiet Place 2 was like one of the first casualties of the quarantine. It was like March 21st release date.
You know what's so funny is that I lied, but I didn't lie. The reason why I said I heard it wasn't that good is because I didn't hear anything about it. That's what I meant by that.
Yeah.
You know what's so funny? I lied, but I was like, well, I didn't hear much about it, and the first one was such a big deal, it must have sucked. I think I just made that connection in my head.
Yeah, it never got released. I was looking forward to it.
I wonder if they'll do it on demand. I would watch that in a second.
I hope so, because I need stuff to watch, which leads me to my other – this is the other thing I watched last night, and I loved this book. It was The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt.
Oh, yeah.
The book is fantastic. I believe it won the Pulitzer Prize, and the movie – stunk to high heaven. Holy
is
shit.
Is it just boring or what's the deal?
It was very long. It was like 2.5 hours long. And here's the thing. The book is very twisty and it's very dialogue heavy. And there's a lot of moving parts to that story. To make that into a movie would have been very difficult, and they did not accomplish it. They left out chunks of the book and it doesn't even scratch the surface of the story. I didn't hate it. It was like, I've been rating things in a quarantine scale show anywhere. I'm like, yeah, it was good for the quarantine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it kind of changes. It gives everything like a curve. It's on a curve or something.
Yeah. So it was like, it was passable. It was quarantine passable. I really stuck it out because I enjoyed the book so much. It's Ansel Elgort, that kid, who was Baby Driver. He plays the lead. And
My feelings, if you listen to the podcast, you know my feelings on Baby Driver. So
yeah.
I don't know if that sours me on Ansel. Also, what sours me is his name is Ansel.
Well, yeah, he didn't really do anything to win me over more in this one.
Fucking Euro trash.
Nicole Kidman. There it is.
There's my ethnocentrism.
And a Seinfeld reference, Euro trash.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're right.
But it was just, it's one of those ones where you hate to be cliche, but you just go, yeah, the book was better. The book was just way better.
Well, that's the stereotype, but that's a thing because it's a thing. It's a real thing.
Right.
That's a saying because that happens a lot. Like to pull off a movie on a great book sometimes is really, really hard.
Yeah. It's funny too that three of like my top five favorite movies of all time are better movies than the books. Jaws, Godfather, and Goodfellas.
Yeah, yeah.
I've read them all, too. And Wise Guys is a fun read, too. If you haven't read the book, Nicholas Pledge's Wise Guys,
yeah, yeah,
you'll be reading it, and then all of a sudden, you'll hear Henry Hill's voice because you're reading the exact voiceover that they took right from the book. It happened to me a few times, and you're like, oh, that's great.
Goodfellas is so fantastic. All right, so I watched another one. I have four more. I watched the original Death Wish.
Oh, that's great.
I'll tell you, Pat Stango, who's a friend of the podcast, he's been on a couple times. He watched it like maybe a month or two ago, and he was like, it's great. I wasn't that, it was like, it's very dated to me. It wasn't that great to me. Like, it was like, you know what it is? It actually proves like how much more violent movies have gotten because you wanted the story to be, because spoiler alert on a 40-year-old movie, he never actually gets the guys that his wife gets raped and killed. And
his
he never
and daughter,
gets
yeah.
the guys that actually, he never gets the guys that actually did it.
Did you notice one was a young Jeff Goldblum?
Yes, it was Jeff Goldblum. Yeah, they raped women. It's really vicious. That's the most vicious part of the whole movie.
Yeah, that's like, the really stuff that used to be more raw in older movies. I think Death Wish is from 74. But yeah, then the violence kind of teeters off. But
he's just going around like as a vigilante. It's like more of a realistic story of what a guy like that would do. That's why I liked it. But I was like, I think I was expecting a lot more. And I'm sure as you get to Death Wish 4, it becomes like Die Hard, or he becomes like a superhero kind of thing.
Have you ever seen The Simpsons? Instead of Branson, Missouri, it's Bronson, Missouri.
Oh, it's the best. He goes, "Hey Ma,
can I get some cookies?"
He goes, "Let me get some cookies." She goes, "No dice, hey Ma. Let me get some cookies." No dice. It's one of the best things ever.
Oh, so I love that. Bronson.
That's a 10-second genius moment in The Simpsons. Bronson, Missouri. Hey, man, got some cookies.
I watched that within 2 years as well. I saw the original on TV, and I just stuck with it and just to watch it. But yeah, that's a pretty good recap, I think.
Yeah, do you want me to save? I had five total. So you want me to save?
Let's knock them out. We'll go through them quickly.
All right, cool. Well, one of them is be really quick. I rewatched Die Hard 3. Okay. I still contend that the first one is the better Die Hard. Best one out of all.
With a vengeance,
Die Hard. Out of all of the trilogy. The other ones don't count. I watched Do-Over with David Spade and Adam Sandler. It's one of those Adam Sandler Netflix movies that came out 2016. There's funny parts because you love those guys, but some of the gags are like, you're like, that's what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like it's a little bit like they don't know when to kind of edit sometimes, you know?
I've loved Adam Sandler since SNL, but I've always thought after Happy Gilmore, most of the movies have been like that.
Well, even like Big Daddy is good. I enjoyed the win with him and Jennifer Aniston. I was like, it's not his typical Murder thing, Mystery but I'm like, it was like a fun little movie. This one, it's just a little bit too like, they're just trying to like, it's a lot of gay jokes like that. He does that, I guess. Like there's a lot of jokes about like, it's like, it's weird. Cause it's like, there's a lot of it. It's accepting of it, but there's a lot of mentions of like, there's a whole scene about him getting fucked in the ass by one of the bad guys or, you know, something stuck in his ass. But like, there's multiple things like that about gay sex. And I'm like, it's not, I don't know. It just seems a little bit old. Like there's so much funnier with other weirder stuff, you know?
I know.
Anyway, that's Joe Over. I wouldn't say you have to check it out. There's some funny parts, but you know, whatever. And then the other one, the big one that I was really looking forward to watching and it did not disappoint, Last Blood, Rambo.
Oh,
which you could also say is it's a biopic of Rambo.
Should I watch it?
What?
Should I watch it?
Yes. Dude, Rambo movies are so violent. They're so violent. It's cartoonishly funny. I remember I saw, this is the last one that came out, but the one that came out right before it, John Rambo, whatever it was called, or was just called Rambo.
Yeah, yeah.
That one is so funny how violent it is. It's just so ridiculous. And this one is even like, they just take it to a new level. And it's a great story. And it's
the one where he's got to save his niece or something.
No, he doesn't save his niece. Well, yeah, right. He's going to save his niece. That's what it is. I mean, but whatever, I didn't ruin the movie for you.
Okay.
That happens early on. That happens. It's a revenge movie. Put it that way.
All right.
But it's definitely worth, I didn't ruin it for you. Go check it out because it's so funny to watch him. Because it's almost after Creed, he realized this is what I should be playing in these movies. The old stalwart, the old guy, the old
Creed's
the old
great,
curmudgeon
man.
Kind of thing, you know? Yeah. So that's what I watched. I watched a bunch. I've been trying to watch as many movies as possible. You
know? I know. Well, should we get to the meats and the peats, baby?
Let's go for the meats and the peats.
Biopics. Fun topic. A lot of great ones out there. I think our tastes differ a little bit when it comes to the biopics.
Well, we're going to
about doing a straight up one-on-one.
Straight up matchup. Yeah.
Directions.
Well, what it is when it comes into, because I got to be honest, like, when you said your pick, I was like, is that a biopic? And it
absolutely
is. But I think of it as a Scorsese picture. I don't know why I thought that. It's absolutely a biopic. But I was like, but I also love the movie. So you, when we brought up the topic, your first pick was like, was Raging Bull.
Raging Bull, baby. The story of Jake LaMotta, which, yeah, I guess a lot of people consider this their favorite and Scorsese's best film. I don't, but it's up there in my top three, I would say.
It's becoming my Scorsese favorite because I haven't seen it as much as Goodfellas.
Right. Best actor for Bobby De Niro, who plays Jake LaMotta, and it's, you know, famously at the time gained like 60 pounds to play older Jake LaMotta. But I mean, just this is a beautiful picture to look at me. It's in the black and white. It's got those classic Scorsese zoom shots, and it's great boxing shots. And it really, I guess, kicked off the Pesci De Niro kind of Scorsese love affair.
Absolutely. It's like Martin Lewis. It's like finding, oh my God, I got to stick with this guy as much as possible. Or audiences were thinking that, you know?
Right. And just, yeah, Kathy Moriarty is great in it, but Frank Vincent is in it. It's such a beautiful,
yeah.
The score is so beautiful in the movie. And it's just, I think Scorsese, it's most like art house film. You know what I mean? Well,
it also starts off this running gag of Pesci and Frank Vincent going back and forth, beating the shit out of each other or killing, right. Because if you think about it, he beats up, what is he doing in this one? Yeah, he beats up Pesci, right?
Yeah. He's Pesci, breaks the glass over his head. I think it's been a few years since I've seen it.
Is that what it is? Okay, so Pesci does that
when they're at the restaurant. And then, yeah, Joey Salvo. Oh,
so then, right. Okay, so that's what it is. I haven't seen it in a bit. And then you have Goodfellas where Pesci fucking kills Billy Batts, who's Frank Vincent, and then you have Frank Vincent get his revenge at the casino by burying Joe Pesci alive.
I never put that together. That's so funny.
Isn't that funny? Like, and I, you know, obviously, I don't know. I think they must have noticed breathing. That was going on. I like Casino, but that's an uneasy. I can't watch that scene.
Yeah, I know it's tough. They're in there.
It's really rough.
He's in his blue tighty whities too. That always threw me off.
I think that adds to it. Like if he was in like. It's so funny. What would your mind change if he was in boxer briefs, which they didn't have at the time? But like, if he was in boxer shorts, which they did have, and like a wife beater or something, there would just be so much more dignity in Casino.
Hey, I'm Nolan Sykes, a host of Past Gas, the number one automotive podcast in the world. Every week, my co-hosts, James Pumphrey, Joe Weber, and I bring you some of our favorite stories from the hallowed halls of car history. From the amazing to the weird to the utterly unforgettable moments, we cover it all. Join us as we take a look at the wild stories and larger-than-life characters behind legendary cars and car makers. So if you love cars or just like a good story, check out Past Gas by Donut Media, the number one automotive podcast in the world.
You know what I mean? Like your Bray Man in jockey shorts with the tidy whities, it's just that much less
still breathing.
Dignified.
Ugh.
He's still breathing. Oh, yeah. He's like, he's like, leave him alone. He's still breathing. Leave him alone. Leave him alone. It's such a crazy scene.
So that was my number one pick.
Yeah.
And I loved yours, too. It was between those two for me, to be honest.
Well, yeah. So my mind immediately when I hear biopic, and I think there's a reason for this, and I just realized that that's why I was looking at my phone because I wanted to look up something else. My mind goes to Amadeus, which came out in like 1984, and
yeah. Best Picture winner.
It's Mozart's biopic. It's
Wolfgang. And
it's Tom Hulce playing Mozart, and I got F. Murray Abraham playing Salieri, who is like this jealous composer that's narrating the whole thing. So it's a biopic that's done by somebody who is in awe of the biopic subject, but also has so much hate for them. That's why it's so interesting and such a great movie.
Laughing at me.
Yeah, it's so amazing, and he's so good in it. But also, I think the reason I think of it is it's directed by a man named Milos Forman. And Milos Forman did like multiple biopics. He was almost like the go-to biopic director for the 80s and 90s or something because he did that. He did The People versus Larry Flint, and he did Man on the Moon.
Ooh, he's your biopic pick.
He's my biopic pick, exactly. But it's interesting to me. I was like, that's where I go right away because I'm like, oh, well, he's the guy. He's the guy to do biopics. You know, like I don't know why I have that's like a side thing. You know, whatever it is, but. I think, but when you put Amadeus up against Raging Bull, God, first off, they're two different movies, but they are both biopics. So you should be able to match them up. But I don't know if I can pick a favorite from those two things.
I know. It's really tough. Both very flawed guys. You can make the comparisons if you look for them, you know? I would say Mozart is a character that you kind of empathize with Salieri because it's hard not to hate Mozart when you watch the movie, but it's also impossible not to appreciate.
That's kind of telling because why? Because of how they're trying to make him like annoying and childish and
Yeah, a little. It's a little.
Why he's so
bit
jealous of him?
Cocky.
The guy. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
But also, you're like, all right, Salieri, stop being a little bitch. You know.
To use the parlance of the times, stop yeah, being a bitch, Salieri.
To use 17th century verbiage.
Yeah, you kind of go back and forth, but you get his viewpoint because and honestly, to be honest, to bring it to the comedy world, I get it. If there was a biopic about John Mulaney, no, you know what? I was going to say John Mulaney. I'd be the Salieri in that biopic, but actually, no, I don't have that look on it. I don't have like a, I have a thing like I wish the emulation thing. I think I have for that where it's like, man, I'll never be that good in what we both do. You know, I'll never be that guy in like his point of view or his, you know,
thing.
So I think that's part of, that's why it's such an interesting pick because it's not all hate. It's like I said, he's in awe of the talent, but he can't believe that it's being squandered with this child. Like that's the way he's thinking of it.
Yeah,
and yeah. In actuality, it was like, yeah, the guy was probably cocky, but he was like a guy who he had a silver spoon since he was like talent wise, and he did what he wanted since he was probably 4 years old, 5 years old. Like he, you know, wasn't it Mozart was like
four or something insane.
It's like a child star. It's like the equivalent of like a child star now.
yeah.
What I mean, like
he's
like
Jonathan Taylor Thomas of his time.
Yeah, so it's like he's like, you know what it was? Mozart was Justin Bieber. Mozart was fucking Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
But Justin Bieber has less talent, let's be honest. Like, he's not as a talented kid. But as far as
you had to convince me, let's be honest. If we're comparing the two, Mozart probably edges him out.
I didn't want to alienate all those Bieber, all those Mozart.
Yeah.
I guess it would be Mozart fans.
Beliebers. Anyway,
the believers.
I'll give you another great lavish piano biopic. How about Behind the Candelabra?
I never watched it. I think I'm,
oh,
I'm afraid.
Oh, it's great.
I'm afraid of the scene. There's a scene, like an anal sex scene that I heard is so creepy about it.
I honestly don't really remember that, so it couldn't have been that.
Maybe somebody made it up.
Lavish, but I mean, it's a pretty gay film because you're dealing with Liberace, who's
well, not the
gay
aspect to it. Not the gay aspect. I don't mind that. I don't even mind if it was a gay sex scene. I don't mind that. I just heard it's very. I thought I heard it was very, a very like creepy dynamic, and I thought maybe it was just like, you know, like where the actual dynamic of the two characters was creepy during the scene. You know, it'd be like,
I mean,
like it was almost like borderline rape scene or something. What?
Liberace is an odd duck, man, and he gives off kind of a creepy vibe. But it's a great movie, dude. It's Steven Soderbergh. I think you'd love it.
Oh, I gotta check it out.
Matt Damon's great in it. It's got a great cast. Got our pal Tom Papa's in it, for crying out loud.
Wow, it's Tom Papa and Steven Soderbergh are really good friends, huh?
Yeah, yeah. They have a the movie is fantastic. I think you'd love it. Check it out.
And it's kind of along those lines. It's, you know, same music as Mozart.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I will check that out, actually. I will watch that. It's probably on HBO Go.
I believe it is.
Yeah, I also I wanted to also talk about the other Milos Forman ones, People versus Larry Flint. People, that did really
great
well.
One.
That's a good one. I think if I had to rate the Milos Forman biopics, it would be Amadeus, Flint, and then Man on the Moon. I wanted to hear what you think about Man on the Moon.
I don't love it because I don't love Jim Carrey. And yeah. I think.
Oh, you mean in general?
In general, but I think he makes it a Jim Carrey movie instead of a movie about Andy Kaufman.
Well, it's very hard to pull off Andy Kaufman. It was one
exactly.
In a million. Like, think about it. There's been nobody like Andy Kaufman since. And also, like, the whole, it's funny because the thing you're trying to do negates the point of Andy Kaufman. Like
the
carbon copy Andy Kaufman is not, nobody's going to buy that completely. Like,
yeah. And I think they kind of tried to do it at the end with the, what's the character he plays? The
Tony Clifton.
Yeah. So I think they kind of tried to pull that.
It's a really bad version of Tony Clifton.
Yeah.
There's moments where I don't mind Jim Carrey's performance in it, but
agreed.
I think they probably could have cast it better. But from what I understand, there was a lot of drama when that movie came out as far as the casting went. Everybody was dying to play Andy Kaufman at the time.
Oh, really?
Like, even Nicolas Cage auditioned for it, which might have been a good – I don't know if he could have pulled it off, but it would have been a more interesting pick to me. But Nicolas Cage to me – I like Jim Carrey. Like, you don't like him. You don't think he's funny, but I
like – Jim, I like a lot of dramatic Jim Carrey stuff. I just, it's like you said, you can't, with Tom Hanks, it's like sometimes you can't differentiate Jim Carrey with the character. That's why I like The Truman Show, because he kind of made that character, it's a believable character.
Yes.
Jim Carrey-esque character. So it works.
Yeah. But like, it's to be a regular guy.
Yeah. When I'm watching him. It's like probably
some of the best. Well, he's also great. He's in one of my favorite movies, and I love him. He's great in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Yeah. I love it. I love it so much.
Yeah.
And he's really good in that.
Yeah, I he's just a bit much for me. It's kind of the same thing I had with Robin Williams. And I know that's, you know, heresy to say for a lot of people, but it's kind of you're kind of a bit much for me. That's
I get it. You don't have to be a fan, but when it comes to this movie, I'm like, the casting, there's a lot of drama around the casting, like I said. And I think there's a story behind it that I can't recall right now, but Jim Carrey went to the lengths of, I think he was showing up and pulling Andy Kaufman type stuff to try to get cast in it. Like he was pulling all sorts of shit to try to show that he's the most dedicated to play this character. So I think that's part of the reason he got it. If not, I'm not saying he's not a talented guy, but there's probably other people you could have put in there that would have been better at that. Like even Nicolas Cage to me. And Jim Carrey, after a while, I think when it was decided that Jim Carrey was like the everyman comedic star, and he was making $20 million a picture, I think something happened in his head where he's like, "No, I'm not. I'm a weird artist. I'm a weird artist, and I'm going to show you I'm a weird artist." And to me, it's very obvious when people do that. Like, it's very obvious when people go, "No, look how different I'm being." And Nicolas Cage, I think, is an authentic artist. Like Looney Tune. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's authentically eccentric, authentically authentically. That is him. Jim Carrey, when he does the things like, you know, he dresses up his stuff, and even when they had that documentary turned me off on Jim Carrey a little bit, the one about the making of Man on the Moon, where it was like,
where he I was couldn't doing, even watch it.
He was being Andy Kaufman off the, on like, when the cameras weren't rolling, and you had all these people that worked with Andy Kaufman, they were like, no, he was a good guy. Jim's just being a dick. Like, it was like that kind of thing. I'm like, yeah, dude, you don't get it. Like, you don't get it enough to do it. Now this is a 20-year-old thing, so it doesn't matter. And I did enjoy the movie overall, but there's parts of it I didn't like because of that. I think, the acting, I always wonder about Jim Carrey, because there's a part in Liar Liar, I like the movie Liar Liar. I think he's funny in it.
Yeah.
There's a part where there's in one of the bloopers where Swoozie Kurtz, they're going back and forth insulting each other with names for the movie. And he goes, "Hag," and she goes, "Overactor." She calls him overactor. And he starts laughing, and everybody starts laughing on the set. And I always wonder, did he know that's the way he was thought of on that set? Like, I always feel kind of bad, but he laughs, and I'm like, I don't think he maybe cares. I think he probably knew when he was doing those comedies, it wasn't it was pretty broad acting. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But I always wonder, is that what got in his head? Like, what people were saying, you're kind of a clown, you're this, you're that.
Well, here's
instead of embracing that, you know?
His masterpiece, Dumb and Dumber, he's not doing the Jim Carrey overacting thing, and he plays it so perfectly.
No, you're right. Dumb and Dumber to me is head and shoulders above the rest of those comedies that he did.
Yeah. We could keep going on musicians alone, but I'll give you one, maybe a group biopic. How do you feel about Straight Outta Compton?
Never saw it.
Crazy young brother named Ice Cube.
I heard it's great, though.
It's really good.
I never checked it out. I think it came and it went, and I forgot to watch it. I did want to watch it.
Oh, you should. It's fun because, we're 90s East Coast kids. Hip-hop was big in our lives, skateboarding. And,
well, they're West Coast, though.
Yeah, but that was
it was part of it. Yeah,
musical ovra, if you will.
Well, I was always curious. I never asked anybody. How was Ice Cube's son acting wise in that movie?
He looks exactly like him. You fucking go, that's Ice Cube, right there.
Yeah, that's what he's damn, that's crazy.
The best one, O'Shea Jackson. He's great. He's in he's got some other stuff cooking too. He kind of broke out of that mold. And he's a good young actor, I think. I like him a lot. But it's a good biopic. You don't really care about how accurate they are with a lot of things. It's funny what they bring up, and it's funny how you remember things in real time. You go, oh, yeah, right, that happened. And then you know, it's got all the cultural influences and everything that happens surrounding that group. It was like, I just remember being so captivated by NWA when I was a kid because it was something that was like banned for me. You know, not like me personally,
right,
but like
right.
a white kid from the suburbs was like, don't listen to this. It's got, you know, like the explicit lyrics label was a big thing. Remember like Tipper Gore and all that whole thing and Body Count. So I was just like in awe of this world I had no knowledge of whatsoever as a like 12, 13 year old.
Right.
So it's fun to go back and relive that. You're like, oh, right. I forgot about that.
It like takes you back to the 90s.
How things, you know, it worked out for everybody. We obviously know, you know, Eazy-E and how everybody went on to do these other things. Dre and Ice Cube and all the lives that they ended up having. So it was cool. It's a good biopic.
Would you say it takes you back to the old school?
Oh, yeah.
You're an old fool who's so cool. No, I actually would love to check it out. I was curious about how it was.
You got some homework to do this week, pal.
I do. I'll just start watching these.
It's crazy when I think about these. Sorry to cut you off. Like how many musical biopics there? I think that dominates.
Like, that I think is the usual go-to because people want to be rock stars. You know, yeah. they want to find out about the rock stars' lives. So they're like,
yeah.
They make these movies.
And once I started thinking about biopics, like,
rock stars have really interesting lives.
Yeah. I was just thinking about Walk the Line too. I started thinking of all music.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I didn't love Walk the Line. I thought it was fine, but I didn't love it. You know, I thought it was okay.
Walk the Line, I liked. I think one of the best. What's it called? Cocaine Blues. Him at the jail. The scene of him playing Cocaine Blues. Probably my favorite scene of the movie. I think it's pretty bad. I think it's as far as authentically Johnny Cash. I think that's the closest you're gonna get to it with that movie. You know.
Right.
The movie's like, it's like one of those things where you're like, yeah, it's a good movie. It's a good movie.
Yeah. Agreed.
It's not, I'm not going to sit there and go, it probably should have been a movie that you were like, oh my God, it's amazing. But I just didn't reach that level. I think it's also a thing where it's like, if you get to a point, like how close they are to the real person really figures into it.
Yeah. Here's one I think sums up exactly what you just said the same way is Bohemian Rhapsody. Did you watch that? The Queen biopic?
I never watched it.
Oh my God. You got like four things to watch this week.
I know. I don't know why I didn't watch it. I was going to, and then I lost interest. You know what? You know what happens to me? Whenever I hear stories surrounding things of what movies could have been, it makes me want to watch it less. Like when I heard it was originally going to be Sacha Baron Cohen, and it was way darker, and it dealt with all the way more issues, and it would have been like a real somber tone. When I realized what it became, and Rami Malek is awesome. I think he's an awesome actor. It makes me go, why bother? Yeah, but I think that was up. Yeah. But it makes me go, why bother watching it? Because it could have been this amazing thing, you know?
And I agree.
He was probably amazing in it, Rami. But the thing about it is that nobody was talking about. They were talking that he got the award, but the movie didn't get nominated for Best Picture. I don't think, did it?
It might have just because
no chance.
14 fucking Best Picture nominees. But agree, it was very popcorny, and I remember. Thank you for reminding me. When Sacha Baron Cohen signed on, I went, fantastic. That's going to be amazing. And yeah, I think it was a lot darker. And here's the thing that it was a big criticism of Bohemian Rhapsody. They left out like a lot of the darkness, and it wasn't very accurate around Freddie Mercury.
Yeah,
and, like,
because a lot of these things
a lot of the debauchery.
A lot of time what happens from what I understand, obviously I'm not a expert on Hollywood, but what happens is the more, it's like too many cooks in the kitchen situation. Okay.
Yeah.
So when you,
too many cooks,
too many,
have you ever seen that?
Of course. Yeah.
Oh, it's great.
It's a half hour of opening titles for the show, right? It's so good. Adult Swim. So too many cooks in the kitchen. So when you get people involved, like I think Brian May's wife was involved, or Brian May was involved, but then there was somebody that was involved that like didn't want it to be dark, or maybe it was Brian May that didn't want it to be dark. So then they're like, all right, and the people who are funding it, they have a say in it, you know?
Yeah.
After a while, like there's a lot of things that a movie can be if there was no restrictions and there was no business aspect to it. It was just putting out the best possible product. But when you have everybody thinks they know what's best for it, you get it. That's not a shitty movie, but you get something way different. That's what I'm trying to say.
I would just like to say Brian May is one of my favorite guitarists of all time. I love his tone and I love his soloing. And I was at SiriusXM one day and I left a studio and I was walking down the hallway. And this was when Queen had reunited with like Adam Lambert, maybe singing. It was,
yeah,
some
that was like semi-recently. So it wasn't that long ago.
It was like 2014. And, you know, they're obviously older now, but he's still got that, like, very Brian May haircut.
Yeah, of course.
And I walked by.
And those guys don't get rid of that. Even Richie Sambora still looks like he did.
10 feet after I walked by, I went, I froze. And I was like, I think I just walked by Brian May and Queen. It was just one of those things. Yeah. I didn't notice who it was as I was walking by them. And then I lost my mind.
It becomes like unrecognizable a little bit.
Yeah, it was like a movie. I ran back, but they were already gone.
Ah! No, but when it comes to, I will check out Bohemian Rhapsody, but I think that's what gets in my head.
Yeah.
If I hear, that's why when I go see a movie with no input, it's one of the, especially nowadays.
Sure, yeah.
That's one of the best things you can do.
Oh, yeah. Still, I like to go in fresh.
I like to go in fresh.
Oh, how do we not talk about it? Yeah, we'll talk about him at the end. Well, Jerry Stiller.
Oh, yeah. But the last movie, well, I wanted to bring up one. And I think this really trumps all of them. We didn't even think about it. It beats Amadeus. It beats Raging Bull. One thing think of. What?
Oh, okay. I was going to try and guess, but go ahead.
I bet you must be thinking this one now. Gotti with John Travolta.
I thought you said Gandhi at first. I was like, all right.
Oh, no, not Gandhi. No, Gotti with John Travolta, which could be... Like when that came out, and we battled this with I don't think you were on the episode. I think we had a guest and you weren't on it.
Yeah.
And with Pat. Pat battled it with us. Pat Stango. He said it was a good movie. He was doing it tongue in cheek. He doesn't believe that.
It's
not even a movie. Like Gotti is not even a movie. It's not. There's no watch it and you're gonna go, this makes no fucking sense. It's like one of those kind of things.
The HBO TV movie Gotti with Armand Asante is good.
I heard that's good, but
I have the DVD of it somewhere around here.
It's still on the thing, probably. I'm guessing HBO Go.
I can't believe I was able to grab it that quickly.
Oh my god! Yeah, Armand Asante. Yeah. I think I just have a. I never saw it because I once again I have a an aversion to anything with Armand Asante. It's not even in there. Somebody borrowed it. It's not in the package. Andy just opened the package and it's not in there.
Quick, I need somebody to coke off.
Did you have a cat burglar come into your apartment and steal one DVD?
Yeah, it was Armand Asante himself.
Armand Asante came. He's like, I need the copy. I got to do coke off of it. I actually would check that one out. But
It's good.
The other one is so bad, and it's a perfect example of too many cooks because his sons were involved. Like, there's moments in Gotti, the bad one. Don't get me wrong. It's unwatchable. But you see a thing. Like, there's the moment when he's in jail, and he's an old man, and Travolta's playing him as an old man, that you're like, that could have been the whole movie, and that would have been good with decent flashbacks. But they just it is so – also because Gotti wasn't a good guy. Like, that's the thing about – there's no redeemable things about Gotti. Like the thing about Henry Hill is that, like, you can almost say there was some redeemable parts, or the book made it seem that way.
Yeah.
Gotti's just a fucking dumb, and a lot of these guys are, when you have somebody who's brilliant in the biopic, it adds to it. Gotti was just kind of a dopey guy. Like,
Gotti was that first guy who broke the mafia rules. Like, he whacked his fucking, like, hierarchy, you know? It was just like...
Right.
Yeah, he you know, his neighbor hit his, like, kid when he was younger, and, like, the neighbor disappeared. It was like, obviously.
Well, to give you an – okay, here we go. The neighbor hit the kid with his car, right? And the neighbor disappeared. But the way they do it in the movie, it was – you would think you're like, yeah, the guy just took a vacation. Like, it's like
– Right, of course.
Like,
mafia'd it.
Like they make the death of the kid like a dream sequence. It's very, like, it's shot so poorly, and then they make very little reference to the fact that he killed this random dude that lived on his block.
Hachi machi.
That's what I'm saying, man. You know, a lot of these guys, they have the rules. Hey, it stays within the mob. You don't kill civilians. And this guy, you know, obviously, yeah.
Yeah.
And to round things out. We didn't mention this in the beginning, but unfortunately, you know, this is a This is kind of a Seinfeld podcast. I don't know if we talk about it.
What a sad week.
And it's really a bummer. Jerry Monday morning. Died, which
what a Monday morning point. Piece of news to wake up to.
Yeah, it's a bummer. The guy was in his 90s. I don't think – was it corona? Does anybody know?
No, it was natural causes. He was 92 years old.
Yeah, he was 92 years old. What a great life. What a funny guy. Like, from all the stories, like, we have
the funniest.
People that are Jerry Stiller adjacent and that knew him. And like Danny Cohen, the comic, he would spend time on Christmas at his house. And he was like, could not have been a sweeter man. So he just seemed like a really good guy that liked comedy a lot and was just like, and the fact that anybody who's married that long and the relationship him and his wife had seems so for real, you know, and she passed away, I think,
a few years ago. But
and Mira I think that they had a comedy troupe together and their parents. Like it's just all good things. Like, you know, a lot of people, you want to put good things out into the world, and all that guy did was put good things out into the world.
Yeah,
you
know? He just brought joy to me and everybody. Every time you see him on screen, you forgot. I didn't realize he wasn't in Seinfeld until season 5. Which is crazy to think about. It was so fun.
Somebody else put that online. I was like, you're right. That's crazy how long it took. Because you think of him as such a big part of the show.
Yeah. And it was super fun to watch all the bloopers resurface again. And just to – we actually had John O'Hurley on my radio show on Sirius XM who played Jay Peterman. And he was telling us how on set, he's like, you know, in the blooper scene of Del Boca Vista, which is one of the most famous – Del Becco Bisto. He can't get it right. He goes
– yeah.
There's like 10 more minutes of those outtakes.
I wonder how he knows that, because he wasn't there for that day of shooting. He probably just found out or whatever.
No, that was an interesting thing, because when we had him on, we asked him, obviously, about Jerry Stiller, and we can't think of any Jay Peterman, Frank Costanza scenes. He goes, no, but we were always there. He goes, it was a big family. He goes, also, the writer... Sometimes for those characters, you never knew when they would need a Jay Peterman. He was like, so I was called to set a lot on standby just because I might be needed.
If they wanted to write you in to like see on the street kind of thing. Oh, wow. That's interesting. I never knew that. That's good.
He goes, I was an audience member for a lot of episodes I'm not even in. He goes, it was a great job to have, you know?
Yeah, because they're obviously paying him for the day or whatever. And, you know.
I think he was being more sentimental about it.
Yeah, no, yes, he was. But I'm saying, but
getting paid to watch Seinfeld, yeah.
But he's still a working actor. He still had that in mind. You know,
of course.
Yeah. If they called him and didn't pay him, you know, he'd be like, it was great, but, you know, whatever.
But yeah, from anyone you know who came in contact with him, just apparently a very sweet man and obviously one of the funniest of all times. He had that old vaudevillian herky jerky way of moving his body, and it just fucking went. It just went with his emoting and his screaming so perfectly. It's just, I mean, just God-given hilarity, man.
There's a video online, because there used to be another George Costanza dad they replaced. And there's a video online.
Oh,
they
really?
Brought him in. Larry David tells him, oh, we had this other guy, but it wasn't really working. And I forget the reason why, but he was telling him, we just want you to play the lines understated.
Yeah,
and then he did that at first, and then in one of the moments he yelled big, and everybody lost it. And they're like, "All right, just do that from now on."
Right,
like one of those kind of moments where it's like, "Okay, you have the right idea. We fucked up," kind of thing.
Which also worked twofold, because then when he did do it understated, it was so funny because you're used to
fantastic.
Him being, you know, just him. Tommy Toon is very tall.
Yeah.
I think the studio would be a lot friendlier with name tags. How you doing, Sam? Hello, Joe.
Hello, Joe. Yeah, he's so – well, you know, one of my favorites is it's the
place to be.
That's such a weird line. It's not even like – it's such a weird, strange line.
It's
and
so
the other
funny.
One's great. Everybody's been quoting this one online this week when they go, Jerry, it's George Costanza. George is dead. Mr. Steinbrenner's here. Call me back. what's your favorite Jerry Stiller line from Seinfeld?
Oh my God, that's really, really tough too. I mean, stop short. The way he delivers it with the hand.
Ooh, I stopped
so
short.
Funny. I think though, I love any sort of Frank and Kramer, you know, scheme.
Oh yeah,
I love their schemes together. Obviously, the bro and the man's ear. Just them battling. I love when he goes, not bro, too ethnic. How about
too ethnic?
But it's also I have a soft spot for that scene when Estelle and George come back to George's apartment and they catch Kramer outfitting Frank with the bro, and they're kind of dancing because it also ties in the record player, and he's got this cha-cha music going on, and Kramer and it leads to Estelle saying the line, and I've never seen my dad laugh harder in his entire life. He goes, 40 years I lived with the man. Not once did he ever look at my underwear. Second he moves out of the house, he turns into J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah.
I saw my dad fall out of his chair laughing just because it's such a funny reference to the J. Edgar Hoover cross-dressing. I mean, it's
fantastic.
Brilliant
and
stuff.
And that's around the time everybody's finding that stuff out. That was that was a recent story at that time.
Yeah.
About the J. Edgar Hoover cross-dressing. The other thing is, a great moment in that when she walks in is that Jerry Stiller kind of stops and looks at her like, he doesn't look surprised. He's just kind of staring at her like, what? But Kramer, you're doing it. Kramer, he dances a very little. Kramer is just full on like, hey, guys, like not subtle at all, dancing away. Just like, there's nothing wrong going on here, you know?
We could do this for 40 more minutes, but.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap this puppy up. R.I.P. J. Dog.
As he was known on
set. R.I.P. Big Homie, as Andrew Fiore would say. I will do my plugs. I'm at Shawnee Time on Instagram and Twitter. Also, guys, make sure that you subscribe and follow us on Twitter. We're at Defend Your Movie on Twitter and at Defend Your Movie on Instagram. And then make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. It really helps the show. I actually wouldn't mind putting I'll tell you after. I was about to say, I want to put a thing in the beginning of the episode. That's it. At Shawnee Time and that stuff. Sorry, Andy, go ahead.
No problem. You can follow me on the social media at Andy Fiore. That's AndyFiori. And check out my SiriusXM radio show. It's every Thursday at 4 p.m. on SiriusXM Raw Dog 99. It's called The Raw Report. We just interview comedians and people in entertainment. And you can catch up on demand. And they're giving away free SiriusXM through the month of May. So if you've never had it, now's the time to check it out. No strings attached. So go do that. And I hope everybody's doing well and staying safe and being healthy and taking care of themselves.
Thank you so much for listening, guys. Defenders, you're the best. And
love
we
you.
Will see you next week, baby.
Adios.